In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, yes.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Time for Pass the Popcorn. That means we get to visit with Alan Adams right here in studio. Hello, Mr. Adams.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you.
We were talking with Chad Finn last hour, and he said he's consumed a lot of coffee out of his Hall of Fame mug. Now, have you been using yours, or did you just put it in a place of honor?
That's the thing, man. Like, it's one of those things where it's almost too nice to use. Like, I'll get over that eventually.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But for now, it is definitely just it's serving as a trophy rather than a drinking vessel.
Well, that's good too.
We're not all up to our armpits in various awards like Chad Finn is.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's
exactly.
Like some of us have to really lean into the specialness. We can't just be tossing stuff around all willy nilly because we're not all the great Chad Finn.
Exactly. Is this because he suggested that you use PEDs to get this?
I'm going to have to refer that question to my attorney. As I told Chad, I have never failed a sanctioned PED test.
That's all we need to know, right?
You know what I mean?
It worked for David Ortiz, so
yep.
Why not you?
Nope. There was at the time that I may or may not have done something that may or may not have happened. The rule did not exist in the current form. So
well, and you know, for our Hall of Fame. We're pretty loosey-goosey about performance-enhancing anything.
Well, I mean, it's like a reverse character clause.
Yes, yes, right, right.
Yeah, it's like, there's no room for the squeaky clean
right.
in the downtown
little
Hall of Fame.
Mr. Straight Edge in our Hall of Fame.
Right, we don't need that stuff in our lives. Like, rub a little dirt on it. That's what I'm talking about.
Right, you know, that's why we want Ken Burns in here, because we know what he's like on the weekends.
Oh, man, yeah, no, you can tell Ken Burns gets after it,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think so, yes, absolutely. Well, we're here to ostensibly talk movies. Did you see anything good in this past week or so?
You know, I did. Just the one, but it was a doozy.
Oh.
We went to see Asteroid City, the new Wes Anderson film.
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, you know, it's... You know, and then I think we sort of venture down this road every time we discuss one of Mr. Anderson's films, but I'm a huge Wes Anderson
you
fan.
And me both.
You know, and it's one of those things where I think I love him not only because I feel like, you know, thematically and aesthetically, like I feel like he matches with my own personal taste. It's one of those things where he's just so consistently himself. Mm. In a way that I don't think we really see from, you know, ostensibly mainstream filmmakers. Calling Wes Anderson a mainstream filmmaker is weird, but the truth is, like, I mean, he works, within the auspices of that system, and let's be real, Rich, you don't put together casts like this unless you are a mainstream filmmaker.
Right.
Like, it's just like. Movie after movie, you just have these incredibly stacked casts, these ensembles, you know, and it's like capital, you know, like capital M movie stars showing up for like, you know, one or two scenes just because, you know, it's everybody wants to work with them.
And he gets great performances out of them too.
Well, and I think that's part of it too, is you have this wonderfully, it's clearly a rewarding experience for the people who do it because people just keep coming back. You know what I mean? It's like you don't make half a dozen movies with a director if you're not actively enjoying the experience, mm-hmm. both on a personal level and a professional level. So yeah, and this is more of the same. It's got a lot of his regulars as well as a few newcomers. Although, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, Tom Hanks has never done a Wes Anderson movie. Interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, he must have done one somewhere along the line, but no, this is his first one.
And Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, who's awesome. But this movie in particular, I think it's proving to be a little polarizing, more so than I think his work traditionally is. But for someone like me, and I would argue someone like you, it's gonna hit just right. Because what we have is, first of all, let's we'll talk about the storytelling structure real quick, because I think that's important. This film, and I want to make sure I get the order right. So it's basically a behind the scenes television show about a production of a play that we see as if it is a movie. So, to wit, we're introduced to the whole proceedings by Bryan Cranston, who is playing the host of it's basically like one of those 50s like television playhouse series. So he introduces us to the people who are making the play Asteroid City. We get introduced to the playwright, who's played by Edward Norton. And we get to, he's basically riffing on he's supposed to be like, what if Tennessee Williams was from Wyoming? Like that kind of, that's the kind of vibe that they're striking. But then we get, so that's all in black and white. The quote unquote real world, whatever. But then whenever we are actually within the world of the play, we're in the full on like bright pastel colored Wes Anderson world. And we move back and forth within that conceit with some bits that occasionally bleed together that are actually one of the funniest moments of the film actually involves the bleeding together. I'm not going to spoil it. But so Asteroid City is the title of a movie. And it's also the title of the play being written by our playwright and starring the actors who not only play the roles within the play, but they also play the actors playing the roles. It's very meta in a really entertaining way. Anyone who's who's any sort of theater nerd is going to really get into it. Like there's a sequence later in the film where we're basically in a mid-century like New York acting school with a lunatic acting teacher played by Willem Dafoe, and the class is filled with all the people who we've been watching play these characters throughout, and it's just so good. The story of the play, such as it is, it's set in 1955, a small town called Asteroid City, in the middle of the New Mexico desert. And it's called Asteroid City because thousands of years ago, an asteroid hit in that area of the desert. There's a crater, and there's a tiny little meteorite left. And so this place, because of that history, has become a sort of... It's become a place. There's a military base and all this stuff. But it's basically... it's home to this sort of junior science achievement sort of celebration that happens every year. And so these five sort of child geniuses have come together to show off their inventions and receive the award. Our primary players are we have a grizzled war photographer named Augie. That's Jason Schwartzman, Wes Anderson's Wes Anderson regular, whose 14-year-old son is one of the one of the junior scientists. He also has his three young daughters with him in tow, and he's a newly widowed gentleman, so newly in fact that the kids don't know yet.
Oh jeez.
So that's our first right from the get-go we're introduced to him when he reveals on the phone to his late wife's father, and that would be Tom Hanks, so the children's grandparent. He hasn't told them yet, and so they're broken down, and so the grandfather has to come get them, and so on and so forth. They're in Asteroid City, where they receive the plaudits of the military base's sort of commanding officer, played by Jeffrey Wright. There's the one local motel managed by Steve Carell. The local auto shop, the one in town that where things have gone horribly awry, the single mechanic, that's Matt Dillon. On and on and on and on.
And I see he's got his muse, Tilda Swinton, back.
Tilda Swinton is back as a scientist who works as part of the facility that's surrounding the asteroid crater.
And an ode to a a 50s U.S. senator, a Bork Hickenlooper, that she's named after.
Yep. And I mean, it's just stuff like that all over the place. And so it's, you know, it's got that sort of Wes Anderson fabulism. So like these kids' inventions are like legit. Like there's a death ray and a jetpack and like all this crazy science stuff. But then it all goes pear-shaped, Rich, when an unexpected visitor arrives. Hmm. I'm not going to go too much farther, but considering the area of the country and the time, you could probably make some guesses as to what kind of visitor we might be getting. And all this while our man Augie is grieving over the loss of his wife, but also developing a burgeoning friendship with the noted movie star Midge Sinclair, played by Scarlett Johansson, whose daughter is also one of the young scientists who may have eyes on Augie Steenbeck's young son. And it's just layer upon layer, and they keep moving back and forth between the quote unquote play to the behind the scenes making of, and it's like these actors are, you know, it's like, okay, is he Augie or is he the actor playing Augie? And like they move back and forth I think in terms of pacing it's seamless, but it's very distinct when you move from one to the other. Like again, like I said, it's all bright colors and whatnot when we're in the world of the play, but we're in the real world, everything's in black and white, very stark. But the Anderson aesthetic, you know, the whole very like meticulously constructed sets and the wide framing and all that, it's all here, it's all happening. And you just get this wonderfully shaggy kind of story where there are some surprises, and then there are some things where it's like, oh, well, it's a Wes Anderson movie, so I know what's going to happen. But it's okay. It's because you almost watch for those things. Like that's why you're here for this movie. And then when they drop our occasional surprise moments, it just tickles your funny bone just a little bit. But I think what I enjoyed most about this movie, because there's a lot that I enjoyed, was Anderson's always had this sort of fascination with artifice, like this idea of, you know, how the meticulous construction of the worlds around us. And I don't think he's ever explored it quite so explicitly as he does with this film. And so to have one of those sort of like underlying themes explored so like clearly was just a really pleasant surprise. And like, I knew a little bit about it. Like I knew about the structure and all that, but I didn't realize just how much work was going to be put in to realizing all of it, because that 50s aesthetic permeates the whole thing, like all aspects of it. And so, you know, you've got the bright colors of, you know, of the New Mexican desert, but you also have the sort of the griminess of 50s New York City. And like we get to meet not only the playwright, but the director, who's Adrian Brody, because again, like this cast is just absolutely stacked. And we watch, you know, as you know, some of these actors are only exist in one part or the other part. And then you have the ones that overlap, and it's so fluid. And it's just this wonderfully, just engaging sense of, I don't know, like, I always hate to use the word whimsy when we talk about Wes Anderson, because it feels dismissive.
Yeah.
But he is whimsical. Like, he is a whimsical filmmaker. And the fact that he has managed to hold on to that sense of whimsy through what, I mean, we're up to, I think, 10 or 12 films at this point.
Yeah.
Like, and still finding ways to keep that sort of sentiment while also crafting something new, because that's the thing. Even when he's doing stuff that's familiar, he's doing it in new ways and interesting ways. And so you've got this wonderful juxtaposition of, oh yeah, he's doing the Wes Anderson thing. And it's like, but I've never seen him do it like this before.
Well, and that's the thing about all those movies I was thinking back, that yes, you can immediately tell it's a Wes Anderson movie, but none of them, no two are alike.
Right. And that's, I mean, and And that's, I mean, I think that's why I find him so appealing. Like, I mean, you can go all the way back to, like, you know, stuff like Bottle Rocket and Rushmore. And it's like, you can draw a straight line from those movies to this one, you know? And that's, but at the same time, it's like, yes, it's a straight line, but there are all these wonderful sort of digressions in each film, like all coming back to that same sort of, those sort of core tenets. But each one sort of explores, you know, wanders off in different directions, whether you're talking, you know, it's like there's the sense of, you know, familial relationships, like those are always a constant, you know, our interactions with the world around us, you know, our, you know, our feelings of love, like love is central, to so many of Wes Anderson's films. You know, it's different kinds of love,
yeah,
you know, and, you know, some healthier than others. But that sort of, those foundational elements are there. It's he's just so good at just, like, you know, at shuffling them around and making a different picture with similar pieces,
and so great at evoking time periods.
Yes, like he's the rare filmmaker who can really strike that balance between sort of verisimilitude and stylization. Like he really makes stuff pop. But he brings those sort of just enough of those fantastical elements to so you're like very clearly existing in a very specific time and place, but it's also just removed enough from our own experience to give it that sort of that feeling of the fantastic. And I mean, to me, like that's what movies are all about, is that sort of that sense of magic. And I don't know that anyone does it quite so well as he does. And you know, this is just another example of it. It's funny, I've been, you know, I've following some of the discourse around this movie, and there it's one of those ones where people are either convinced it's one of his best or one of his worst. Yeah. I know where I come down. I get it. I think it's one of those deals where it's not necessarily as narratively tight as some of his other films, and it does get a little digressive at times. I think it's typical in the sense that there are a multitude of subplots, like, unfolding, and, you know, they get treated with different amounts of attention. And if there's a subplot that you're particularly interested in and it doesn't go where you don't get enough of it, I could see how that would bother you. As someone who's, again, been, you know, ride or die with Wes Anderson for like 25 years at this point, I mean, you kind of want to just be like, are you new? Like this is what he does.
Right, right.
Like this shouldn't come as a surprise to you. So as far as I'm concerned, I think it's very well realized. You know, there's been some bombast, like, oh, Wes Anderson's best film. I don't think that's true. I don't know. I don't know that there are very many people on the face of the earth who have made a better movie than, say, The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah.
But I mean, top five Wes Anderson, that's a pretty good movie. And yeah. I would argue that this one belongs in that sort of conversation.
Nice. Well, I can't wait to see it.
Oh, it's so good, man. You were going to dig it.
Awesome. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams talking movies with us. We'll see in a couple weeks because we're both on vacation next week.
Yeah, giddy up. Let's go.
Happy birthday in advance and happy anniversary. Happy birthday to Sheridan. Happy anniversary to both of you.
Thank you very much. And happy birthday to you, old farts.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's a muted celebration. You get to this point, it's like, oh, we made it to another one. Cool.
Who'd have thought?
Who'd have thought? Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.